Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Hello, Fat Mascara family. It's me, Jen.
It's me, Jess.
We have a special Valentine's Day episode. I'm just pretending it's a Valentine's Day episode.
V-Day.
I mean, I don't give a crap about V-Day, but it's a fun episode. First up, we're going to talk about, is the quest for perfect skin a waste of time? Dun, dun, dun. Then, hypoallergenic products, do they even exist? And the last topic is, what's the right makeup for daytime drama?
I have the answer.
Our guest is the reason I'm calling this the Valentine's Day special. Who is it, Jess?
Boom, chicka, boom.
Boom, chicka, boom.
It's my love. It's my beau. Light of my life. Dr. Jeffrey Janeski.
For new listeners, we're not just bringing on Jess's fiancé for the hell of it. He's also the scientific director at Kiehl's. So we're going to talk chemistry, cosmetics, and we'll get into the beauty industry's most famous romance. All right, let's do it.
Also, warning, warning, for like the first part of this episode, I don't sound so great. I have a bit of a migraine, so I'm keeping my eyeball in place.
Yeah, Jess isn't even looking at me, but that's okay with you guys. Let's talk.
Any migraine sufferers out there? Shout out.
Jess, something's been bubbling in the zeitgeist that I want to talk about.
Uh-oh, the zeitgeist.
Yes. So I've gotten a couple pitches from writers recently about the whole new skincare craze. And at first, I'm like, what are you talking about? Skincare has been a thing for years. But as I dug into it, it seemed that a lot of women right now are feeling this new kind of pressure to have quote unquote perfect skin that I'm almost equating it to, like, trust me, the pitches were not this clear. And I'm still working on if this is even a story, but it's a podcast topic. Like back in the day, people would always talk about the perfect body, or you got to get beach body ready. And I think we've all decided that's a freaking farce. Like,
right, right.
Bodies are all different. We all look different. Your body is right for you. Like, you can be beautiful no matter what you look like. But for some reason with skin, it's still a thing that people think perfectly clear, poreless, no acne, no wrinkles, no lined skin is like something that they should strive for and something that's achievable. What do you think?
I think that's a really apt analogy, but I don't think people are like stopping caring about taking care of their bodies. You know, like I don't think it's like we've all given up like, oh yeah, I guess we'll just like eat this donut, or like people stop wanting to look like, you know, Karlie Kloss or whatever. There's still an apex of what people might want to look like. Now, your Karlie Kloss might be different than my Karlie Kloss, but there is an ideal.
When it comes to skincare?
When it comes to skincare. I don't think the ideal for most people is like, oh, I really want huge pores and rough skin and like good skin is a sign of good health. Like, right. End of story.
Right. But in the quest for this good skin, I mean, the skincare market has sort of exploded. It's almost like cosmetics now.
Oh, wait. Can I backpedal for a second?
Sure.
Because I'm just anticipating what people might say. Now, if you have acne, if you have a scar, if you have dark spots, I'm not saying, oh, God, man, you're unhealthy. Like,
yeah.
I just mean from
a scientific background,
some evolutionary mumbo jumbo that, you know, I've learned in high school or something. Like, generally speaking,
yeah,
you think good skin, health, in some kind of back of your brain.
No, like, yeah. This is what my thesis was about in college. Yeah. Evolutionary biology will tell you, you look for in a mate or in the people that you're around, clear skin. Because if you had a rash or something like that, it was, back in the day, it was a sign of, like, maybe you're sick.
Right.
And so humans wouldn't want to be around that person, which sounds horrible. Anyway, back to the point at hand, which is a lot of women are feeling this pressure. And obviously the beauty industry has jumped on board with a gazillion new products that you need to make your skin better, and sort of are making skincare almost as like collectible and fun as color cosmetics used to be.
I don't have a problem with that at all. Like, I think it's fun. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about the other day with the woman from Yes Too, and I asked her, like, you know, why are masks so popular? And she's like, because they're fun. You know, like, there's a huge experiential quality to that. I don't have an issue with that. B, I think taking care of your skin is, I mean, am I, like, do you feel like I've drunk the Kool-Aid here? Like, it's good for you. Like, you know, SPF is good for you. Antioxidants are good for you. I don't want to look like, you know, my ancestors look like when they were 60. I want to look like freaking like banging. I want to look like Goldie Hawn.
I always think that when I watch like period historical drama movies, I'm like, we all know nobody would have looked like this, right? Because there wasn't any makeup and everybody had boils and whatever else.
Yeah. I read an article that's making the rounds. Maybe you guys have seen it from the website, The Outline. And it said like skincare is a con.
Hmm.
Now, I read the headline. I was like, no, come on. Like, there's a lot of marketing in skincare, sure. But to say it doesn't do anything, or that we've all been duped into this kind of like escalator, like treadmill rather, mm-hmm. of like going nowhere, is completely untrue. If you use good skincare, there is likely a chance you will see an improvement.
Yeah.
Now, maybe this is actually a great segue, although there's a couple segments in between, guys, to my, and I may sound biased, but to Jeff's section, but like, there is real chemistry and real tests behind some, not all, beauty products.
Yes.
People, this is their whole job.
Yeah, but I think what I read that article too, and I think what she was saying is that everybody hypes up these active ingredients, and some of them you start using an active ingredient, but that causes another skin concern that you then have to fix with another product, and all of a sudden the treadmill that you're talking about is like, great, I used an acid and a retinol, but now I need a calming mask because I'm all red from that stuff.
Now, she was talking about something that is a completely different, or she was putting it in the same article, where I think it would have been far better to tease that out and put that into a different piece, which is the obsession with like resurfacing right now.
Right. Like,
and
people
that
are using,
we need to talk about
over peeling and doing all these ingredients.
Yeah.
And we should visit that at another point. But for now, just with these women that have been talking to me, and I've heard it just from like friends and things too, they're just thinking about their skin more. And it's not an age thing, because they're not talking about lines. They're just truly talking about like wanting to have that poreless Instagram filter kind of skin.
Yeah.
It's just unachievable. And I feel like we all need to manage expectations.
Yeah. That's like, you know, I think you're going to get like really skinny thighs if you just like, you start eating cottage cheese or something. Like one, you know, one one thing does not lead to the next result. Like, right. So, yeah, we're kind of stuck in the 80s if we think that we're going to
have use hope this in cream a jar. And, yeah.
Exactly. Hope in a jar. So, yeah, maybe we're a little bit behind there, but, you know, maybe it's that's actually the perfect analogy because everyone was like crazy about diet and exercise in the 80s. And now we're, some of us are at a more measured place with mm-hmm. fitness and exercise. And it's, you know, kind of like under this guise of wellness. Well, maybe in 10, 15 years, everyone will just be a little bit more measured about skincare. Yeah. And we'll think back, like, remember when we bought all those wacko, you know,
yeah.
like drills for her face and like, you know.
Totally. I want to end on that note because I'm picturing it would be so not cool to be like, you guys, I'm on a diet and I'm trying to lose 10 pounds or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't, it would be as much as that goal is, I understand, very important for some people and health is important. Like you wouldn't really talk about that as much as I sit around at brunch with people and they're talking about like, oh my God, I'm using this new mask because I think it's going to get rid of my pores. Like it feels like right now.
Yeah,
it's okay
that's,
to talk
that's
about
the
that.
Thing to talk about. I don't know what yeah. we're talking about in the next 10 years, but
it'll be the snack yeah. wells of like 2020.
Yes, yes.
Remember snack wells and everybody's of like, course. They're fat free.
Oh my
and
God,
like,
ate them by the box.
Oh, like a dozen at a time.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll figure out these face masks or the snack wells of 2018.
I think they might be. They might be.
Just, you know, keep your expectations measured, everyone.
Yeah. Jen, I got a lot of, on the while we're on the skincare tip, I get a lot of people asking me for recommendations for face washes, moisturizers, blah, blah, blah. And then sometimes I feel like we get into a little bit of like a tennis match
mm-hmm.
because I'll say something and they're like, I can't have that. I'm allergic. Or
oh, yeah.
I only use naturals. Because I'm allergic to everything. I'm like, wait, but you might be allergic to the, you know, essential oils or I'll suggest something mainstream.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, I'm allergic to that brand. And I'm thinking, how do you know that you're allergic to that brand? But I don't want to get into an argument. I'm just trying to help a girl out, you know?
Yeah. I know. There's, first of all, there's no point getting into that argument with anybody
no,
because they
it's
believe
like, it's
what
almost
they
like
wanna.
Political, you know? Yes. I just say, okay.
It's funny that you say that because obviously part of our job, people are always asking us for product recommendations.
Yeah.
Like, I went out this weekend. It was like they find out you're a doctor and all of a sudden they're showing you weird things. Like they find out you're a beauty editor and like everybody's...
The bag is like overturned.
And everybody's just like, okay, here's what I need. And I'm like, I am not your personal shopper. But weirdly, the thing that comes up again and again, and I've been noticing this on our private Facebook page as well. Go to the blog and click on the link. Jess will let you in. People are always...
Operator standing by.
Operator standing by. People are always asking for quote unquote hypoallergenic products.
Uh-huh.
Which I think...
What does that mean?
Absolutely goddamn nothing. You know what? It really doesn't. So hypoallergenic, obviously what people think it means is that this has been tested to be less allergic reaction causing than other comparable products.
Okay.
One would think that's what it meant.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s, it very well might have. But in the 70s, the FDA did all of this research into it and said, like, how can we use this word and what can we say it means? And they decided, you know what? Anybody can use that word because it doesn't mean anything. So right now, if you see hypoallergenic on a product,
oh
as gosh. Far as the government is concerned here in the United States, that means nothing.
That's really
a
scary.
Company might internally say that means we've tested it on 100 consumers and less than 5% of them had an allergic
wow.
reaction. Whatever, they could make up their own reasoning for it. But this isn't a term like USDA organic or you know, preservative free that then has to have truth behind it because it's so vague.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually,
what can we do if you are like an allergic person?
Well, here's
highly
the,
allergic.
Here's the thing, you don't really know unless you've had a patch test with an allergist what specific ingredients you're allergic to. I did want to point out, because people have reactions to products, always test them first, of course, on yourself and see what you're allergic to. But the ingredients that people are actually allergic to compared to what they think they're allergic to is pretty interesting. Can I give you
yes.
a couple stats?
Oh, please.
Okay, so there's actually like a whole group that studies contact dermatitis, which is basically a catch-all term for I put this thing on my skin and I got redness, sensitivity, bumps, allergy. The things that actually cause that in a large percent of the population, the biggest one of all that I found was balsam of Peru. It's
okay.
Like a, it's like a fir tree oil. It's used in fragrances sometimes. 20% of the population is allergic to that.
Wow.
It's a huge amount of people, 1 in 5. Then lanolin, you know, the,
oh, yeah.
the wool oil extract, which some brands are actually based around, 4 to 6% of people, depending on the study, there's a couple different studies, are allergic to that, which isn't nothing. That's, like, significant. And then, of course, people are going to be like, but those are natural. What about the chemicals? Everybody's allergic to chemicals.
Yeah.
The biggest is what are called MITs or CMITs, methylchlorothiazolinone. I wish your I said that wrong. I wish your fiance was here right now and he would fix it. it's a type of preservative, and 5% of the population is allergic to that one. And polyquats, you know, that are in hair products a lot.
That sounds funny.
They say the word, if you see quat on an ingredient list, up to 6% of the population.
Oh, wow.
Parabens, though, you know how people are always like, I don't want parabens.
Oh, yeah, they're freaking out.
Less than 1% of the population actually have allergic reactions to parabens.
I think I've actually heard someone tell me they're allergic to parabens.
Now, I'm pulling all these stats from one study here, one study there. All of them had more than 1,000 people in the study group. So, like, that's pretty significant as far as the population goes. But I just think that looking for hypoallergenic or trying to find chemical-free because you think you have an allergy isn't the route to go. Like, get in there and figure out what exactly it was that gave you the reaction. Like, do some science, people.
Do the science. Let's talk about love.
Okay.
Sometimes you've got to show up for love, you know?
You got to show up.
You've got to show up for
love. Like, you got to bring it for love.
You've got to be there so many ways.
Okay.
But you've also got to, you've got to look the part.
Oh, where's this going?
It sounds weird, right?
Yeah.
Saturday was my bridal shower. It was a small, intimate group.
Yeah.
At a cozy little restaurant, couple tables.
Yeah.
Couple tables. And, but I wanted to look not like a regular diner. I wanted the people in the restaurant to know that.
I'm special. Celebrate me.
Yeah, yeah. That this was no ordinary Saturday bruncher. This was a bride-to-be baby. So I had your makeup done. Yeah.
P.S. If your makeup, which we'll talk about in a second, didn't tell the people, when you got up to thank everyone and also started talking to the diners that were not part of the bridal shower.
Listen, this is New York City, baby, okay?
She gets up to thank her friends that had thrown her the shower, and she goes, listen, other diners, feel free to ignore me. She just starts addressing them. Honestly, someone needs to get dressed like a show or something. You were hilarious.
I felt awkward, as anyone would, right?
I don't know. You seemed to own it. But like then all the other diners were like listening in. They're like, oh, I want to hear her little speech. Anyway, you looked great. So tell us, what for you constitutes showing up
for love?
Well,
I have to give credit to my makeup artist. I did have a makeup artist because I wanted to get in the zone.
Yeah.
I wanted to feel special that day.
Yeah.
So I palled around with Mia Jones, mm-hmm. who I know just from work, from the beat. She works with, of course, Charlotte Tilbury.
Mm-hmm.
Bow down to Mia. She's brilliant. And she gave me this really kind of rosy, I don't say rose gold because it was more rose than gold. It was mm-hmm. kind of like a berry vibes look.
Yeah.
But it was daytime. But the thing that really took it, made a little bit more polish was the brows.
Yeah, you did look like it was day makeup, but done up, but not to the level it's like, why aren't you at the club right now?
No.
There's a fine line, actually. Yeah. So what do you think brows is the key?
She really and I have dark brows to begin with, but she really filled in the brows. She was fearless about filling in the brows and really kind of, I think she overextended them just a tiny bit.
Yeah.
And brushed them up and just really filled those bad boys in. Also, just a tip, just to keep people on their toes.
Yeah.
I usually wear like a brown liner, like a dark brown liner, or like even like a brownish purple. She went for black liner. Normally, I would think that would be like too much for me.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because the rest of the makeup was very light and like luminous. I think that's a nice way to change things up without being like, all right, I'm going to do like a bright red lip or like, you know, a glitter eye. It's just these little subtle shifts, I think, are a nice way to like
bring the daytime drama.
Yeah, bring the little daytime
drama. It's funny that you say that too, because I always think, okay, when you're getting dressed up more than normal, you either put on a lip or a smoky eye. But the minute you do either one of those, you look nighttime.
Exactly.
So I like this tip that the brows or darker liner is the way to look a little bit
more polished. And really, and we're just talking about skincare. She actually spent probably like, let's say we were together for an hour, she probably spent like 40 minutes on the skin.
Yeah, like just really massaging it and prepping it, mm-hmm. and then nice foundation, like clean skin.
Yeah.
That's a good tip for sure.
And Jen, you did pack a hell of a gift bag.
Oh, I forgot. Yes, we had Nest candles, Sicilian.
Sicilian tangerine.
It smelled like,
I just realized it was an Italian restaurant and it went together. I didn't even plan
it
that.
Go together.
And then we had some yes to coconuts, coconut oil balm, mm-hmm. and your favorite Kiehl's Midnight Recovery oil.
MRC.
And some Body Shop because I know you love an animal-friendly vegan
Love a little animal-friendly. I love Body Shop.
Yeah, it was fun.
The day I feel die.
Like, I felt like everybody was feeling beautiful that day.
It was really nice.
Just show up for love. Okay, so there are some stories about my mom's life that I never get tired of hearing, and they're usually the ones in which she's trying to right some injustice and then ends up annoying the people in power, and I love that about her. Anyway, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve memories and stories for the mother figure in your life or any of your family or chosen family. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. The prompts are really good. The kind of things we ask guests here at Fat Mascara, little things like, what's your favorite board game? And more important things like, what's the best advice you've ever gotten? Storyworth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is respond to the email with a story, long or short, doesn't matter. You'll be emailed a copy of what they wrote, but they'll also be collected. So you'll get to enjoy the retelling of the stories and probably learn some new things in the process. Then, after that year of fun, Storyworth automatically compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. Even though I know some of my mom's best stories, I love that the weekly prompts are helping to uncover more details and that they'll be collected in one place for me to revisit and read through. Don't think I'm not going to pull this keepsake book out at our next family get-together to share some of them. Listen, everyone loves Storyworth. It has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/mascara. That's storyworth.com/mascara to save $10 on your first purchase. Okay, everyone, guess what I did last night? I slept in my Honeylove bra. I don't think I've ever slept in a bra before. Usually, I am so excited to take off my bra at the end of the day, there would be no chance I would lay down in it. But Honeylove bras are that comfortable. And if you're someone who does like to sleep in a bra for a little extra support, I feel like the Honeylove crossover bra should be your sleeping bra. Did I just coin a thing, sleeping bra? I don't know if they'll approve of that, but I love the idea. Obviously, you're gonna wear it out all the time too, because Honeylove's bras feature supportive bonding that eliminates the need for uncomfortable wires. Plus, they're made with a fabric that's so soft, it feels like a second skin. Is it spring cleaning time in your house? I know it is in mine. Clean out your bra drawer, get a few from Honeylove. They have the V-neck bra that's smooth and seamless and hardware free. And then my personal favorite is the crossover bra with adjustable straps and a hook back closure. And of course, again, no underwire in that one either. The Honeylove supportive bonding lifts and supports without those uncomfortable wires. And while you're at it, why not pair your Honeylove bra with their matching shapewear or maybe a pair of their breathable, versatile leggings? Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/mascara. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off. It's honeylove.com/mascara. And then after you purchase, they're going to ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we here at Fat Mascara sent you. Honeys, you deserve this. Again, that website is honeylove.com/mascara for 20% off.
All right, it's not often that we talk about supplements, but when we do, you know that we mean it, all right? Every day I do my skincare routine, and that is a cleanse. I moisturize. Of course, I pop a little antioxidant in there. I'll do a little serum underneath there. But what is non-negotiable for me lately is I take a supplement. That is my Ritual Hyacera. It's a wrinkle support skin supplement, which is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and improve skin smoothness. I'll take that.
I'll take it too. Ritual Hyacera is a once daily skin supplement. Jess said clinically proven. Let me give you the deets. In a clinical study, Hyacera led to a 3.6 time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles within 90 days as compared to placebo. Jess and I have been taking it more than 90 days. Let me tell you, it works. Plus, Ritual Hyacera has led to a 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness in the same amount of times. It's rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. You don't always know if a supplement does that.
Ritual also has industry-leading sustainability standards. They use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, love that, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. Plus, female-founded, B Corp, meaning they're holding themselves accountable to not just their company's financial health, but also the health of the people and our planet. You gotta love that.
Yes, okay. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust.
Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off. People with brows.
Guys, I am so excited for this interview. We have Dr. Jeff Janeski, Scientific Director of Kiehl's, but more importantly, he's the other half of my favorite person, Jessica Mallon.
More importantly.
I mean, less importantly.
Wait, no, more importantly. Come on.
Jeff is also Jess's fiance, who we often mention on the podcast. Welcome to Fat Mascara.
Thank you so much.
Can you hear me blushing?
That's why I decided to do the intro so it was less nerve-wracking. You're just smiling like
a goon.
You kind of look like a goon. This is adorable. I'm so excited. Okay. I knew this was going to be awkward for you guys, so I'm just going to commandeer the beginning.
Yeah.
Because before we talk about science stuff. And Kiehl's.
Is that why I'm here?
Yeah.
Okay.
First, we want to talk about the beauty industry's most amazing and celebrated love story.
Okay, but before
Deborah
we
Lippman
do that.
Deborah Lippman and her husband.
Before we do that,
just want to say, big fan of the show. Big fan of the show.
Thank
Consistent
you.
Listener.
You are.
I'm a couple of episodes behind right now, mm-hmm. I will admit. You know, we're just coming off the holidays when we're recording this. Family commitments, but big fan, I must say.
Well, good. I'm glad you're here.
Yes.
Can you guys just say, I don't think you've ever talked about this, Jess, but Jeff, why not, from your point of view, can you just tell everyone how you met Jess and why this is a beauty industry love story? And Jess, feel free to interject.
It's a total beauty industry love story.
Yeah, so, tell us.
So, as part of my responsibilities for Kiehl's, I do things like this. Outreach, I'm an ambassador for the brand. I talk about what the science behind our products is. What do the ingredients do? How do we test them? Etc. So you know that very well. We've had many a meeting.
We have.
And strangely, Jess and I have too, since we've been dating. But the first time we cast eyes upon each other was actually in the Kiehl's flagship store, 13th and 3rd Avenue. Mm-hmm. We had an event for a product and...
Stress repair.
So Jess... yes, a good product. Jess came to the event. And she's going to kill me. She was wearing glasses because her eyes were irritated that day. And I remember saying, oh, there's
I was on Restasis.
The re-wetting eye drops?
Yeah.
Love it.
So anyway. We had a few different sessions that day. I think, you know, beauty editors kind of came in and out. But I did remember noticing the cute redhead with the glasses. Then fast forward about 3 months... another launch event, new museum, Bowery, cool. We had 100 people there because it was U.S. editors. It was editors from Asia and Europe all over the place. I do my presentation. It went well enough. My PR colleague, Lauren Rodelitz from Kiehl's.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Lauren. So after the presentation.
One of my first PR friends.
Yes.
She went to
long-time
Kiehl's with my
friend. PR friend of Jess. And a close colleague of mine, we worked together on the event, she told me she wanted me to be introduced to one of the beauty editors after the event. I was just kind of walking around, you know, talking to people, answering questions. We had a little bit of a chat and...
Wait, Jess, did you ask to be specially introduced to Jeff?
You know, Lauren and I are friends. We talk.
And you were like, he's cute. Who is he?
I did say, who is Dr. Janeski?
Ooh, okay.
What's his story? And little did she know that she was going to be swept away on a romantic date at the Tribeca Tavern only 1 week later.
Is such that how it went down, Jess?
Well,
such a classy venue. She was so impressed with me.
I did text my friend saying, what is this Tribeca Tavern business?
Well, you told me that you lived downtown.
Yes.
And that at the time, I guess you didn't work downtown, but you lived downtown, and I was like, oh, easy. Like, I'll just like pick out a bunch of places where I've watched football before, and I could get a $3 Coors Light. I just wanted someplace casual to have a beer.
Oh, it was casual. It was casual.
It was
very
casual.
Walked in there before. Or ever again.
Or ever again, yeah.
And this was 3 years ago?
Four years ago.
2013.
Four and a half years ago.
The launch that we met at was the Super Multi Corrective.
Super Multi Corrective. Yeah. Now a Kiehl's customer favorite.
I love that product. Yes. That's the purple jar.
Why am I
stuff?
Doing yes. your job?
I love that product.
I don't know, but this is hilarious to watch the two of them. I wish you guys could all be here and we had video because it's adorable. Aww. So the date obviously went well enough and you guys started dating, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Like right away.
I have to ask though. You eventually moved in together. You did
yes.
get engaged, which is fabulous. But how does this go? Like living with someone who's in the biz. Do you guys like come home and talk about beauty products?
I annoy Jeff all the time.
Sometimes it's more Jess asking me about products. I would say because we'll get into my background, but my title at Kiehl's is scientific director. I have a technical background. I work in product development and on kind of the technical side of things, more or less.
And he has a PhD from Cornell in chemistry.
Ooh,
is that right? Did I get that right?
Close enough.
Okay.
chemical engineering.
I'm going to be a doctor's wife.
a PhD.
Can I put that on my mail?
It usually goes down like Jess has a product that she's into and she'll want me to assess it. Right? I would say that's usually, I mean, and she actually makes fun of me like going the other way because I'm not very forthcoming about what I'm working on a day-to-day basis. Because, you know, she is in the press, right? So there's a time that people in your profession get involved with knowing about something that we're working on at Kiehl's, right? And that time is typically later than when the heavy-duty work is going on like making the product, making the formula, or doing the testing.
Wait, pause for a second. So right now you're working on a product that might not come out for like 2 years?
Right. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And I'm happy to talk about the timeline of how it works because I know, you know, people are probably interested in the behind the scenes of it a little bit. But just, you know, for now I'll say typically we're working on things, you know, we're working on things 2 or 3 years ahead of time. And it's not the time when we're ready to tell the world about it. And of course, I trust her. She's not going to go blabbing to every Tom, Dick, and Harry about it. But
so even if you bring home like a lab sample or something, Jess can't play with it.
No.
Does this put a wedge between you and the relationship?
She complains about it sometimes when she wants to pick on me.
I respect that you're like a rules follower because I like rules.
She likes rules far more than I like rules.
Yeah, so funny.
Like
okay, so when you if we looked at your medicine cabinets, like who has more products?
Jess, 100%.
Wow. Okay,
you have 100% more products plus 100% on top of that plus 300% on top of that easily.
Yes.
I like products, but I'm not a complete product junkie. I'm trying things all the time because we're working on things.
Yeah.
But I kind of have like my standbys, my go-tos that are part of my normal routine. So yeah, I'm not like constantly trying this, that, and the other thing. I take, you know how like Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg, I'm completely comparing myself to those two guys.
Wow,
right now.
Okay, let's go there.
You know how they wear the same thing like every day, or
yes.
Steve Jobs
yes.
wore the same thing every day? It's, you know, it's one less decision that they have to make. Now, I don't wear the same thing every day, but I don't necessarily want to be trying a new product every single day if I don't have to.
That's
just me.
Got it.
But
whereas Jess's job is to do just that.
I love
that.
Trying new
Yeah,
products.
Because, yeah. you know, if you're trying a new product, then you have to think about where does that fit into my routine? Does it fit with this, that, and the other thing? And, it gets to be a whole cascade of decisions. I don't want to do that every day.
But, like, okay, so, yeah, last night I tried on a new product. I loved it. You were nonplussed.
We didn't go deep into it, though. It was more like a concept of a product that you were telling me about.
Yeah, like we get into a lot of debates, though, about, like, products.
Yeah, but, I mean, a lot of times, too, it's like, you know, Jess wants me to turn around the ingredient list and break down, like, every single ingredient and we don't typically go through every single one and say, what's this and that in for, what's that in for, but, you know, sometimes
I usually ask you, I feel badly, at, like, you know, 12
like a.m. when you're just about to go to sleep and I'm playing the night.
Right.
You'll be like, what's this?
Right.
Yeah. What's ascorbic acid, Jeff? Is this good?
Yeah. I'm like sitting there with a book and like ready to pass out and due to being tired and not wanting to think about work at all. And yeah.
I am going to break out one of my favorite creams and we're going to have you look at the IL.
The for those IL.
For those of you.
Ingredient list.
Yeah, a little slang, a little lingo today. The ingredient list.
Oh, that's fun.
And
we'll see what Jeff says.
Yeah, we're gonna run it by Dr. Jeff.
Before we get into that, you briefly mentioned your background, but you're the scientific director at Kiehl's. What do you do and how did you get there day to day?
How did I get here?
Yeah.
It's like the Talking Head song. Do you guys get charged for that?
No, we'll cue the Talking Head song now.
Right. So my background is in chemical engineering. As you mentioned earlier, I have a PhD in chemical engineering from Cornell. And basically what that means is I studied, in a way, the physical chemistry of materials. But that's something that's really interesting for cosmetics because, you know, basically we have within a product, we have all these diverse ingredients and we have to think about the ways that they interact with one another within a product and what that's going to do in terms of the properties, the way that they feel or look when you apply them. And also at the end of the day, what they're going to do for your skin in the case of a skincare product.
Right. So day to day, you're like mixing up products.
I started that way. Yeah, sure. So, you know, when I first came into the industry, I really was a cosmetic chemist, somebody who's working with his hands every day.
You were at the bench.
Lab bench. So, like, if you think back to everybody took chemistry in high school, right? So you have these benches where you might have a bunch of beakers and Erlenmeyer flasks mm-hmm. and all that type
Bunsen
of stuff.
Burner.
Bunsen burners, yes. At that point in my career, yeah, I was working on the bench every day. I was, you know, my job might be to come in the morning and, I made one version of the cream, version 9, yesterday, but the slip wasn't very good. It felt a little bit draggy, so maybe I want to increase the emolliency of this thing and make it feel much smoother on skin. Maybe I talked to the person, one of my colleagues who's an expert in ingredients, and she said, we really need to add an ingredient that's going to give a better effect on fine lines or wrinkles or brightening the skin or whatever it might be. So, yeah, I think a lot of people when they come into the industry as a chemist, they start this way, right? Like really working with your hands, working on the bench.
Mm-hmm. And now...
So from there, you know, I moved up a little bit through the ranks within what I would say is kind of like the lab side of things. So, you know, you start kind of working with your hands, or at least I did. Then I moved on to do a little bit more in terms of the ideation of, you know, what's going to go into the products. Like, you know, for instance, what are the active ingredients going to be to deliver a particular performance? When the marketing team start to write copy for packages or advertisements, et cetera, to start to review those things to make sure that they're technically precise, because that's something that's really important as well. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I was the manager of the skincare laboratory for Kiehl's. That was my previous job to the one that I have now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like managing all of the people who are the cosmetic chemists working on the bench.
Yeah, got it.
And now you're the scientific director for Kiehl's.
Right. So now it's kind of a subtle shift, but I moved, instead of being located at the laboratory every day, I'm located in New York. I'm sitting basically with the marketing team, the PR teams, the education teams, and I work within a product development team within the brand. So what myself and my colleagues do is we're kind of the people who sit in between the lab, and the marketers are all the people who are responsible for the final communication and how we're going to advertise or sell the product, right? And my job is a little bit specific though, because I have obviously a very technical background. So I'm still working with the labs every day to come up with ways that we're going to drive the performance of our products. I'm working with my colleagues in product development every day to think about what we might have to do to make a product look or feel a different way. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly working with my colleagues in the education teams that, you know, help to train the people in our shops and our PR teams and our marketing teams to make sure that we describe the science behind our products in a very clear and precise way, and also in a way that people can understand.
because he's such a well-spoken scientist. They let him out of the lab. They were like, he's good with the beauty editors, we hear. Let's bring him out into the market. So, Jess, you have some questions.
It's so funny because it's like, you know how sometimes you don't know what the people who are closest to you do all day? Yeah. I feel like I love this like very close description of everything you do. I mean, I know what you do all day, but hearing you talk about it is really new. It feels very fresh.
Was that, I don't give you my elevator pitch every night?
No, I just feel like, you know.
Are you falling in love all over again?
Oh, Jeff. Can we get little like bird sounds?
Yeah.
Well, people were very excited, Jeff, when I told them that you were coming on the show. Now, I posted in our private Facebook group, and guys, if you're listening and you're not in the private Facebook group, it's not that you're not invited. It's just that one of our amazing listeners started it and you have to join. So I will put that link up on our website again, just as a little refresher. But you're all invited and I'll let all of you in. I told folks that Jeff was coming on and we were barraged. Is that the word?
I like barraged. It. I was going to go with inundated, but I like
inundated
it.
Inundated with a barrage of questions.
There you go.
Yeah, I think so. It's very close after the vacation. With questions. People want to know how products are made. They want to get behind
how
the curtain.
How products are made.
Yes, they want to see behind the curtain. So. I didn't answer my question yet.
Okay.
I thought that was a question. they want to know like the culture of like, you know, product development. They have so many questions because we don't get to talk to someone like you every week. This was one of my favorite questions. Do chemists hate the marketers and merchandisers? This is from Michelle. Guys, I'm giving you credit. Shout out to Michelle. This is like a reader's choice, listener's choice show. I think we might do this again, too. I like this crowdsourcing questions.
Michelle wants to know if you hate the people, your colleagues.
Do I hate the people that I work with every day?
Jeffrey Janeski.
Do they give you,
hate?
Yeah, like, do they?
But, like, is there, like, a beef between, like, the chemists, like, the, you know, the two sides? You're saying that you were at the bench, and now you have this amazing, like, hybrid role where you get to, kind of in a different situation. So, you know.
I mean, honestly, there's only one person I hate at Kiehl's. I'm kidding.
breaking news right here.
Yeah, I put on a very serious face. They both freaked out.
I know. I got really. I was like,
No. We don't. Are
you kidding me?
He was.
Yes, I was kidding. The chemists and the marketers do not hate each other. I think they're two groups of people who speak very different languages, though, and. When the relationship is working right, I think each is challenging the other group, right? Because the marketers they're not going to have the same background as the chemists and vice versa. So the marketers are always going to want to say more than the chemists want them to say. Mm-hmm. The marketers are always going to say, I don't want you to use this, that, or the other ingredient because, either it doesn't fit the positioning of our brand or we heard some customers don't like it or whatever it might be. And the chemists, of course, want to be able to use anything that they want to use to drive performance. But I think, you know, basically when you work through a project together and you have an open line of communication to one another, you kind of meet in the middle. And that's where you can get a very kind of impactful communication.
It's like
you
any
can get
good relationship. It's about a relationship. It's like any good relationship.
Good analogy.
Right?
No, totally. And I think... Honestly, you need strength in both. If you're a really strong company, you're going to have strength on both sides because if marketing is pulling things too far, then you're going to have communication that's not precise or that's overpromising. And guess what? People buy something once, but if everything you're saying about the product is not true or they don't find it to be true, they're not going to buy it again. And if the lab is way too restrictive or in terms of what they're giving to the marketers or what they're not working with the marketers at all to deliver the things that the marketers want, then you're not going to have as good of a product. So I think you really have to meet in the middle.
Okay.
Good relationship.
Lovely Tanya from our Facebook group had a question about that. She wanted to know, how do we learn to read labels better? Like you, those ILs, like we don't get that much from them. I don't know. Is this where you wanted to bring out your prop, Jess, or no?
Do you want to do that at the end?
Okay, like let's
a little
do
game,
that.
Like
but
a little
as
game?
Just as a layperson, yeah. Are there key ingredients we should be looking for to support certain claims or selling points? That was Tanya's
right.
question.
So this is a tough question too, and we'll look at the product that Jess brought in, but mm-hmm. there are definitely tried and true ingredients that you can look for, but. You know, honestly, at the end of the day, it can take a little bit of the fun out of it. You know, I mean, we're always looking for new things. Just because it's new or something that even I haven't heard of, it doesn't mean it's not good, right? So I think, yeah, of course, you can look for, like, the vitamins. We know that those are good. Vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin B3, vitamin B5, E. All those are certainly tried and true and certainly been studied for many years. Mm-hmm. And if you formulate quote-unquote correctly with those products, you're likely going to get a good skincare performance, whether it's for, you know, vitamin A for wrinkle performance, vitamin C for brightening and anti-wrinkle, vitamin E for its antioxidant performance. But I think, you know, I can't sit here and say that just because it's a new botanical extract or a new synthetic ingredient that's coming from chemistry that it doesn't work. So I typically like to look a little bit more at what is the substantiation that the company has for the product? And by that, I mean the testing. You know, is it, are they, you know, making a claim on hydration? And did they say, oh, it hydrates for 24 hours?
Yeah.
If they're saying that, then they've used an instrument to study the hydration on people with the product
legally,
actually does.
Legally, they had to in order to make that claim.
Well, hopefully they're doing this. But yeah. I mean, at least if they're claiming 24 hydration, it's very likely that they at least did an instrumental study to show it.
So with Kiehl's, do you guys do like clinical tests or?
Yeah. Okay. So if you're looking for a treatment, like a leave-on product, something for anti-aging or skin brightening or, you know, whatever it might be, I'm a scientist. I have a scientific background. I like to see objective proof, right? So
yeah.
That might mean a clinical study. That might mean an instrumental study. But at the same time, we know that people want to see an effect on their skin as well. So a lot of times what we do in the industry is consumer studies as well. And that's
you
where
think
you
those
see,
are just as valuable? Like look, if 98
I mean, I
out
personally,
of 100 women?
Right. I personally am a scientist, right?
Yeah.
I like to see objective proof. But at the same time,
very
I'm never going to...
black and white.
Well, no, I'm, but think about it, though. I'm never going to take it away from somebody.
So what kind of flowers are at the wedding, guys?
Right, right. if someone uses a product and she believes it does all these great things for her skin, and she thinks the experience of using it is wonderful.
Yeah.
Like, why should we take that away from them? I mean, we don't have this debate in other industries, or we do, but I think it's kind of stupid, right? Like,
yeah,
you
like
can get into debate of like
17% of women like this blue sweater because it made their eyes look
right,
bluer.
Right.
No.
Or like, yeah. You know, there's the whole like Android versus iPhone thing all the time, and like,
yeah.
Or whatever cell phone you're using, and what are the technical specs of it. At the end of the day, of course, there's the performance aspects of it and like what the processor is in the phone and how much memory the phone has and all that thing too. But there's also an aesthetic thing to it. Like, do you like the size of the screen? Does it fit in your hand well? Mm-hmm. Does it work well with your other, your other things, right?
Does it like, so, suit your budget better?
Yeah, no, exactly. So I don't think we should discount, you know, although I'm kind of the technical guy, I don't think we should discount the aesthetic aspects of products. I think it's really important. But so I guess, but that said, I do like to see, you know, if I'm looking at like a product that's being sold for anti-aging purposes, as a scientist, I do like to see a clinical study or an instrumental study or something that's demonstrating the effect of the product because,
okay.
You know, you can play on the ingredients and the communication that you of these certain ingredients that you have, you know, 98% of consumers saw this or that, but, you know, I still like to see
you want the proof. You want
yeah.
the proof. Okay. So we got a lot of questions from people talking about silicone. They need to
silicones.
Know. They need to know, Jeff. Like they're not sleeping. Okay. I'll just give you one of the questions, and this is from the lovely Amanda. She wanted to know, are they good or are they bad for your skin or your hair? And I know you have experience in hair, so you can speak to that too. What are they for? She avoids them because she thinks they're fillers to make cheaper products feel luxurious. Ooh, that sounds so like shady,
this.
Right? but she said she keeps hearing professionals embrace products that that have them. So what do you think?
Okay. So this is a big topic. So silicones in general, I mean, I think some customers think that there's like a silicone or there's two of them or something. It's a class of ingredients, right? So what unites all of them is a very specific chemistry. We're just going to go a little bit technical just for a second. I promise.
Boring.
I won't go into the rabbit hole too much. the reason I want to say it is because the reason that cosmetic chemists use silicone is because of a couple of very unique properties of silicone ingredients.
Okay.
So one is that they're very, very flexible. And another is that they're very, very spreadable. And those are kind of related, okay? So basically, everybody knows what a silicone feel, or most of your listeners will know what a silicone feel on skin is.
Mm-hmm.
The technical reason that it's so spreadable is silicone has an extremely low surface energy. Okay.
So it's not going to drag against your skin.
No,
slips.
So, but the point is...
I can't believe you know this stuff. Like, I can't believe this stuff's in your head.
All right,
surface energy.
That was super deep.
So, but the point is, everybody, even in the cosmetics industry, people look for replacements for silicones because people like, was it Amanda?
Lovely Amanda.
Like, want
think
to avoid
they don't
them.
Like
but,
it, yeah.
Right. So, but that's fine. If you don't like a silicone feel, or if you're somebody who's very militantly all natural, silicones are synthetic ingredients. Let's just get that out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to use any synthetic anything on your skin, well, I mean, good luck, but like, you could avoid silicones. That's fine. If you don't like the feel of silicones, by all means, avoid them. I'm not here to tell people what to do. If you're convinced that if every time I pick up a product that says dimethicone on the label that I break out, I would tell you my expert opinion is that there's not really any evidence that supports that silicone is comedogenic. But if you think it does it to your skin, then avoid it. I can't tell you. I'm
Are
not
they
gonna...
cheap fillers like she was imagining?
So it goes back to the question of aesthetics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we use other emollients. We use vegetable oils that, maybe could give you a skincare benefit as well, but are also going to modify the feel of a product. Is that going to, would you call that a cheap filler?
I don't know. As far as raw materials cost, are silicones?
Not necessarily. I mean, there's all different. I mean, I'm not like the... I'm not a purchasing guy. I'm not, analyzing the cost of these things all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, if the alternative is that you're going to take
out... Camellia oil, then that's a little pricier.
Let's put it this way. If the alternative is that you're going to take out silicone and you're going to replace it with water, you know what the cheapest ingredient is? Water. Right?
Yeah.
So I think, if you're not concerned about the things I mentioned, my advice to people would be don't worry so much about, if you see dimethicone on the label... or, whatever silicone ingredient it might be, don't worry so much about it. And we do use them sometimes for performance purposes as well. So first of all, the feel on skin.
Mm-hmm.
We know that, as again, I said, aesthetics are super important. So people want their products to feel good. So that's an important reason that you use this class of ingredients. But there's other, there are different types of silicones. There are a whole different class of ingredients. Like I said, they're a whole class of different ingredients. So you might use a silicone elastomer for a soft focus effect on skin.
Mm-hmm.
So almost like a little film that you can make on skin that's going to temporarily mask the appearance of lines, wrinkles, and pores.
For a blur cream or primer or something.
Right. Silicones are also anti-foamers. So if you want to cut, you want some foam, but you don't want a complete huge foam, the silicone can cut that
Ooh,
a little bit.
Didn't know that.
So
either.
It has to do with the surface tension again, Jen.
Thank you. Thank
nerdy,
you for coming
nerdy
on the show.
Tip.
Yes. Yes. All
Next
right.
question.
This is another biggie.
A biggie.
It's a biggie.
Oh, I'm
right?
prepared.
Okay. So a lot of people, like Amy, one of our listeners, said that there is a difference between, or rather she wants to know what the difference, I'm going to call this a leading question, the difference between U.S. and European products. What are the differences between them? And
in terms of
what we can buy, or like the rules like between them. I mean, I always
you often hear, about the EU being
more
restrictive with their ingredients.
Yeah,
okay.
The EU bans everything. The US allows everything.
Okay, so from the perspective of Kiehl's, I can say this. We're a company that sells all over the world. And by and large, we're selling the same product. If you went down the street in New York and bought it, if you bought it in Paris, if you bought it in Tokyo, right? So you also will sometimes see, for whatever reason, number 1,300 sticks in my head. I think the people say there's 1,300 banned ingredients in the EU and like 10 that are banned in the US. There's a bunch of ingredients that we would never consider to use in a cosmetic product that are on that EU ban list. You know, why they're not officially banned in the US, I don't know. I'm not a regulator. But essentially, by and large, we're having to respect all of these EU rules if we're an international brand anyway. So I think, you know,
for large brands, there might not be a huge difference between European and American versions.
Totally. If you're selling globally, you're typically not going to see a difference. But there are some exceptions, and those exceptions are really in the categories that are regulated in the U.S. So OTC categories, like particularly sunscreens, that's where you see a big difference a lot.
You're talking about things that on the back have an active drug listed.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So, and a lot of times, you know, sometimes we may have the same product. Like if it's an acne product, sometimes the regulations aren't so different in the EU versus Asia. Mm-hmm. Sunscreens, the regulations can be different, particularly around the UV filters that we're allowed to use in EU versus the US. But in that case, EU is actually less restrictive. So that's where some of the situations where you'll see a difference. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the flip side of the coin a little bit where, you know, I think people
people
think that EU is more restrictive, and in some ways, maybe they are, at least in terms of what they put on the page for their regulations. But on the flip side of things, in some categories, the US is more restrictive.
I feel like you led us very nicely into Rebecca's question. Mm-hmm. Rebecca wants to know, she didn't know you worked on sunscreen, but we know that. What makes a good sunscreen? And then also, how come some of them can leave your skin feeling dry and flaky? Or maybe she just means the product gets dry and flaky. You have to figure it out because that's your job. What does Rebecca want to know?
She was like the sunscreen king. Remember on the beach you brought like so many sunscreens that summer?
Was this an early date?
Yeah, early days.
No. How many sunscreens did he bring to the beach date?
You had like five different models.
I was like cleaning out my product closet or something.
Wait. You went on a date with him and he brought five types of sunscreen to the beach.
No. This is like we shared like a beach house situation.
That was early on in your...
Early days. But I was like, this guy really like brings a lot of sunscreens. He brings a lot of options. There was an
Well,
oil,
I mean, there were a bunch
a
of people in the house. So, yeah, you know, yeah. I had to hook everybody up.
Yeah.
So then
wrong with that.
What
makes a good one then?
So, you know, there's always a lot of debate about sunscreens too, because you can find a lot of information out there. What's a quote unquote mineral sunscreen?
Why are you giving quotes with minerals? Why are you giving quotes?
He means a physical sunscreen.
Well, because a physical versus quote unquote chemical. Okay, mineral, fine. You could call it a mineral sunscreen if you want it.
Okay.
I mean, I might want to call it like a particulate sunscreen, but anyway.
You're marrying them.
Bell thought it was funny. Of course, I think most of your listeners know that the two quote-unquote classes of sunscreens work in different ways. Mineral, more in terms of like reflecting UV light, whereas a quote-unquote chemical sunscreen is more going to absorb UV light. That said, you know, typically dermatologists, I know, you know, if you have sensitive skin or acne prone skin, they will recommend a mineral sunscreen, right?
Correct.
This is kind of like a common recommendation that you'll find in a beauty magazine, let's say. That said, you know, there's plenty of sunscreens that use quote unquote chemical filters, and I've worked on them where we've tested for non-comedogenic and have flying results, right? So I think it goes back to the question about the silicones. Like, if you know that if I turn over the back of the label and I see avobenzone or, you know, a chemical UV filter that I break out, then by all means, avoid them. But I think customers can find solutions either way, right?
Right.
And I don't know if Rebecca was specifically asking about mineral versus quote unquote chemical sunscreen. I have to say quote unquote every time.
Amazing. Drink every time Jeff says quote unquote.
But I think, you know, again, I, personally as a
customer,
I'll use
for?
I'll use either one. And again, I rely on the testing. If it says non-comedogenic on the front of the label, then at least I have some confidence that the brand or the company did some testing to substantiate that. In terms of what makes a good one, I think sunscreens are a real challenge in terms of formulation. And the reason is you either have a whole lot of powder because you have titanium dioxide or zinc oxide or both, or you have a whole lot of oil load because the UV filters that are the quote unquote chemical ones are oily. Okay. So they're really a challenge in terms of aesthetics. If it's something that you're using every day, again, looking to what they're saying about a product, look for something that does claim something like all day hydration, because then you know that you're getting that skincare benefit and you're going to prevent that if you have a concern about dryness and flakiness. In terms of why that's happening, it could be different reasons. I mean, whether you're using, if you're using a mineral sunscreen, you're going to have a high powder load.
Which that could be that drying. Dryness, yeah.
And even if you're using a chemical sunscreen, I won't say the quote-unquote this time. I'll
still
just imply
it.
Yes.
For an extra drink.
those, you know, sometimes the company will use powder ingredients to give it a more mattifying feel on skin so it doesn't feel so oily.
Oh, yeah, people with oily skin, sure.
And also for either, you have to use solubilizing ingredients to keep all the filters stable and suspended and all of that, and some of those could have that effect on your skin too. So if you look for one that, you know, might have an all-day hydration claim, if it's one that you're going to use every day as your daily sunscreen, at least you're going to have some humectant ingredients to counteract that.
So Norma from the group had a question. She wants to know, and I've heard this too, and I actually have always been scared of this, but I never said anything.
Mm.
Do some ingredients cancel each other out?
I wouldn't worry so much about that, Norma. So I think, you know, the most important thing, there was a little bit more. I see the question on your page. There's a little bit more asking about, like, mixing retinols.
Don't look at my page.
Well, okay. So I snuck a peek at Norma's question. And so she's asking specifically about mixing AHAs, BHAs, retinols,
vitamin C.
So I think the biggest thing to heed with these types of ingredients, we know that they're very active, tried and true ingredients. Heed the recommendations in terms of like day versus night usage, or, you know, if you're using an AHA product, to make sure, if you use in the morning, to make sure you layer over a sunscreen,
mm-hmm.
Because they can make your skin a little bit more sun sensitive. Look, I'm completely happy to be corrected on this by somebody, but this drives me crazy because there's just something I read for the derms say all the time. I won't say all the time, but I've definitely seen it quoted in a number of articles. It's saying, don't use an AHA and a vitamin C product because it deactivates the vitamin C. And that's probably, you know, maybe the reason Norm is asking this question. I don't understand this feedback at all. I completely disagree with it. A lot of vitamin C products, if they're an aqueous vitamin C product, they're actually formulated at a low pH to essentially make the vitamin C work better and to stabilize it within the formula. So why would using a glycolic peel or something like that deactivate the vitamin C? It just seems completely asinine, and it doesn't match up with my knowledge of the ingredient at all. At Kiehl's, we take a little different approach with vitamin C. We actually have an anhydrous product. That's our powerful strength line reducing concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
New version coming out very soon, or it probably will drop by the time you hear this. I got to get
out.
One plug in.
It's out.
It's out.
Saw it.
It's out.
Get it now.
It's doing great.
It's in the stores.
But anyway, that kind of drives me crazy because, if you're a chemist or a dermatologist and you think I'm wrong, feel free to write in and explain why. But I really
it's
don't
not
agree
true.
With
it. What about I use a growth factor and then some nights I also want the retinol for a little exfoliation. Do you know anything about if those two counteract each other?
Yeah, I mean, so I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't expect that they counteract
each other.
They're not
in the same formula, obviously.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're going to have kind of different modes of action, so or at least theoretically. Everybody. I think
it
sometimes
is. I'm like, this works, but this might work too. So let's do both.
No, I think so. By and large, I think as a customer, and you know, for better or worse, there's more and more information that you can find. Everybody has the internet, and you can ask one person one thing.
I'm asking you,
one
the
person
expert.
Another thing.
Do they cancel each other out?
No, completely. So I'm just saying.
Everyone has an opinion.
Right. Everybody has an opinion, and it's impossible for me to think about every different permutation of using products together and if they might.
From your knowledge.
But from my knowledge, I don't have any concern.
Yay. So good. That's what I wanted. I wanted to be reassured.
Putting on your growth factor and your retinol.
Yes.
Oh, maybe I need to use growth factor.
Well, let's ask Jeff what he uses. We're coming to that portion of the interview. So you said you were a classicist, not in that you...
I'm a classicist.
You like the classics.
Don't I get a chance to ask any questions? I told you I'm a big fan of the show. Maybe I can have some different suggestions for the show. I think you guys, I love your theme song.
Oh but, my God, this is the critique portion of
yes.
the interview.
Okay, theme song is cool. It's fun. But maybe you guys need an announcer. And I work just right down the street from your recording studio. So you know how like in
he's
SNL,
really enjoying being at this mic, isn't he?
So
I'm gonna get you on
you know
home.
Live from I don't know what would
studio
we, Studio 7
Embassy Row.
Yeah.
Okay, so the like the music, you know, maybe
we could romance
announcer.
It up a little bit too. Like as the cars stream into the Holland Tunnel, back to New Jersey.
We're gonna have to crowdsource whether or not people agree with you on this one. Tell me about these classics that are in the Jeff Janeski medicine cabinet.
Okay, so...
Hair first, because you have gorgeous hair.
Why, thank you.
A lovely man, Bob.
Yeah, I do have shoulder-length hair. Shout out Xavier, John Frieda, Serge Normand.
What's up, amazing. Xavier?
Yes.
What products do you use on it?
So
he used to have really long hair. So,
Xavier, yeah. He knows what he's doing. So if you're a guy with longer hair
beautiful
and you're in New York... I typically use L'Oreal Professional Lyss Ultimate because it's I find it to be a very conditioning shampoo, and typically I don't need to follow up with a conditioner.
Oh, but you have nice shiny hair, like you do use conditioner.
Right. So sometimes I do use a conditioner. If I use a different shampoo, if I use what they have at my gym, which just happens to be a Kiehl's product. I will use the Kiehl's amino acid shampoo and the conditioner that they have at Equinox. Shout out Equinox. like they
Jeff
need
Janeski
a shout out.
Is hashtag spawned. Like so much sponsorship.
I'm completely willing to hashtag spawn if Equinox wants to give me a free membership for Equinox.
Well, you go
come
like
on.
3 times a day.
Not true.
Once a day.
okay, back to the spill.
Okay.
Face
back
products.
To the
skincare spill. Is where you really excel.
Skincare.
So what
well, let's finish hair.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
So I do. Okay, I have longer hair, but I find that my hair can get a little bit greasy or oily if I use the wrong product on it. So I actually like to use a very light gel just for a little bit of hold, and just to keep it out of my face. So shout out to Kiehl's. I actually forget the product name. How awful is that?
Kiehl's. It's like light hole gel.
Yeah, something like that.
We'll put it on the blog.
I'm not a marketing guy. I'm not concerned with product names. really, really great promo I'm doing for my brand right now. Clean hold styling gel. Yes.
And can I move on to face, or do you?
Yes,
really keep,
we can
okay.
move on.
Okay. So what are your classic skincare favorites?
So. I have some staples that I use from Kiehl's for sure. I love our nightly refining micro peel concentrate. And if we want to talk about just kind of philosophy for skincare for a minute, I am a big believer in gentle exfoliation. And I think kind of from a philosophy standpoint as well, I like products that can kind of work on anybody. And I think if you have a gentle exfoliant, whether you're, you know, 18 or 80, it's going to do good for your skin. It's going to make your skin
more
radiant.
Is this one a manual or chemical exfoliant?
So this one is a chemical exfoliant, but it's very gentle. You can use it every evening. I know some of these peeling products have gotten more popular. There's some from other companies that are, I think, stronger in terms of the acid percentage and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I like one that you can just use every day without thinking about it. So that's why I like our product.
Nice.
And I think, you know, it seems a little bit boring, but just a good moisturizer, you know, whether...
What's yours?
Well, moisturizer, I do switch around a little bit more. And it's the type of product, too, that I'm kind of trialing a lot for different things that we're working on because... obviously it's a very, whether it's an anti-aging moisturizer or a quote unquote basic moisturizer, it's the type of product that we're working on quite a bit. But I do like our Facial Fuel products for Kiehl's.
Oh, yeah.
So that's our Kiehl's men's line. So I'll use our Facial Fuel moisturizer. And, you know, some of our Kiehl's classics like Ultra Facial Cream, I really like too. Yeah. So last but not least, you know, I'm certainly not going to be the first or last person to say this on the podcast, but SPF, obviously super important. So I think...
What's your sunscreen of choice?
Sunscreen of choice, I do kick around a little bit on, I would say. I most recently I've been using our Ultra Facial Cream SPF 30. So, you know, I wish I could be more diverse in my product recommendations, but hey, I work for Kiehl's. I'm not going to apologize.
What about fragrance?
Fragrance.
Your fiance is notorious for her nose.
Yeah.
Did you fall in love with Jeff's smell, Jess? It's important, right?
So I smell good.
But you didn't have such a vast library when I met you.
No.
I
think I went through a period where I had like a bunch of different fragrances and then I'm like, oh, I'm going to be more minimalist. And I got rid of some of them. And now I'm back. I'm back, baby. I'm strong.
What's your favorite that he wears, Jess?
I like, you were wearing Ferragamo the other day.
Yeah.
And then YSL.
Lum. I wore that for years and I feel like I've exhausted myself on it a little bit. I don't know. Do you guys find that you get not sick of, but like you just want to try something new? I think I'm in that phase right now. And it's winter, so like I've been enjoying the Tom Ford mineral.
Oh, that's a beautiful one.
What's it called?
Oud Mineral.
Oud Mineral, yeah.
It's an oud, but it's like crisp and salty and cold.
Oh, it
smells cold.
Right.
Oh my God, it's so great.
And the Jazz Club replica.
Mm-hmm. From that's very nice. Maison Margiela.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like to, I do like, I think fragrance is, I'm not going to be the first or last person to say it, but it's just a cool way to just, change it up. And, you know, it's a fun thing. Sometimes you can wear something different in the morning. And then if you're going out that night, something a little bit more smoky or, you know, something a little bit more suitable for a night in the town. So, you know, we're going out like all the time. We completely don't want to go home and sit with our cat.
Never. Not you guys.
I think those are
some of my faves.
I expected you have a good wardrobe of fragrance, and of course you did. Now I will allow this game that I know nothing
about.
The
game may commence?
Sure.
Okay. Jeff, I'm going to show you the IL for one of my favorite products. Now, I'm not going to say the name of this product. We all know this product. Okay. Ooh.
Is he supposed to guess the product?
He's not going to guess the product. Okay. That would really be amazing. But he is going to give us his Dr. Jeff diagnosis. Is this a good product? Don't read off too much that we don't want our friends
walk
at this
us through
brand
your thought process.
To like, you know, we don't want them to be upset if you're not happy with it.
Okay.
But I just want to know, like, is this a good product for me? And I also want to say this is not a cheap product.
So this is a sunscreen?
There's sunscreen in it,
okay.
But it does not market itself as a sunscreen.
How did you know just looking at it?
How'd you know?
So, well, it's interesting because the ingredient list has UV filters like hemosilane and avobenzone, octocrylene. So it's clearly a sunscreen, but it's not listed in the U.S. FDA OTC manner. So I guess I would have to guess.
It could be on the UK site.
Yeah, I have to guess. Okay, so it's a UK product, I guess.
Beauty detective.
Beauty detective.
So,
Dr. Jeff needs a theme song.
So just, you know, I feel like this is the exercise we do at home, which I guess is the fun of it. So the first ingredient, of course, is water.
Part.
And then you have a UV filter, and then you have glycerol stearate SE, which is an emulsifying ingredient, which keeps like the oil and the water together in a nice harmonious cream, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it has ingredients like butylene glycol, which are kind of like solubilizing, can give you some moisturizing performance as well. Cetyl alcohols, like a co-emulsifier, so that's there to kind of anchor the oil droplets within the water. C1215 alkobenzoate is a solubilizing ingredient for the sunscreens.
Jeff just got super hot.
Like, this is like, I am into this. This is like, I see it, Jeff.
She's like, I wasn't sure before, but now.
Keep going, okay. Keep going.
So what I'll say about this product, and this is, you get to a point on
like,
the ingredient
list. Are you like into this so far or no?
So it's... I mean, it's a pretty classic product. The glycerol stearate is kind of like a what we'd call like a classic emulsifier. It's going to give you, this product is definitely like a, I don't want to say heavier cream, but it's definitely a cream.
Yeah, rich. I love it. Oh, yeah, I love
it's,
rich
it's cream. Probably pretty rich, but it's going to have some slip because we have the aforementioned silicones in it.
So far, he's nailing it. It does.
And
now, this is really cool. Let's do this with every product.
Okay, so what... And this doesn't mean it's a bad product, but it gets to the point in the product where you get a whole lot of what we would call like quote unquote active ingredients or like or a combination of botanical extracts, sodium hyaluronate, which is a class of hyaluronic acid, peptides, etc. It doesn't mean it's a bad product. But as a formulator, I kind of when you see like a whole list of things there. I kind of feel like, so why did you put all these things in?
You're
why
just throwing them in to say you have them.
Yeah. It's okay. Almost like there's a lot of like flair, if you remember Office Space. Like, yeah, I have my like 100 pieces of flair.
Yes,
So it's not
a lot
to say
of flair
that it's.
To this moisturizer.
They do actually, they brag about that, but I thought that was a good thing. I was like, oh my God,
I mean, put it this way. Would you rather have three things that are each going to like one for anti-aging, one for moisturizing, one for brightening at a good level? Or would you rather have 20 things at a low level? Right.
And how do you know they're a low level? Cause they're just low down.
Yeah.
On the list.
And again, it doesn't mean that they're not working if they're low down the list because I see there's peptides in here. A lot of peptides can be efficacious at a relatively low level in the formula. And that's why, you know, I know customers always want to know, like, oh, what percentage do I need of this or that thing? Or, like, if it's low on the ingredient list, is it not going to work? And it's not necessarily true because some ingredients we don't need so much of. But I would say, you know, that's more like my it's more the aesthetic. Yeah. But, in me looking at this ingredient list, it's more like the aesthetic of formulating and like how I would do it is not exactly the same. But again, it doesn't mean it's good or bad.
Okay.
So Jeff, what I hear you saying is Jess can keep using this lovely rich face cream with all the goodies.
Keep using it.
I love it. Fine. Good. I'm not going to stop.
I'm going to have to rifle through your products later to see what it is.
Also, just so cool that you could look at this and like pretty much nail exactly what it is without even seeing the product.
Hey, I'm a pro, Jen.
You are. Thank you so much for coming on Fat Mascara.
Jeff, I'm so giving you more products when we get home.
Oh boy, can't wait.
Okay, now tell me you love him and tell her you love her.
Love you.
Love you.
Oh, God.
Best interview ever.
We're gonna raise one. We're gonna raise one. We're gonna raise one. We gonna raise... Okay, I'm raising my wand. My wand is actually... Are you ready? Wait for it.
Oh, wow.
Did you hear that?
Fire, fire, fire!
You're like... You just lit a match in the podcast
studio. Wait, and now she's gonna...
Okay. Be careful. The producer's like, the flame is getting too close to the microphone. The flame's gonna go out because what I have here is actually incense. It's called Hibi Japanese Incense. 10 minutes aroma. Don't you love Japanese
names? Oh,
that's
really nice.
So what it is a little pack that looks like matches, 10 matches.
Oh, but it's actually an incense stick.
Yes. So you light them like a match. I'm sorry, we won't do this for very long because I know you have a migraine.
No, it's fine.
It comes with a special little pad that you put it on. And then the match stick part of it is actually incense. So the flame goes out. And you know how, like, with incense, you're always like, where do I put it? What do I do?
You need, like, the whole kit and caboodle for it.
Yeah, this is just 10 minutes aroma.
Oh, it smells great.
Okay, so this one's Japanese cedarwood, which is delightful. Oh, I'm sorry, Japanese cypress. And then you just use it, like, in a hotel room or a little area that needs zhuzhing, and it's only for 10 minutes. It'll be incense, but it looks like a little matchstick, and they're inexpensive. Aren't they really cool?
That's really cool. And just looking at it, I'm like, wow, that is so clever. Like, how come no one's ever thought of that before?
Well, the people over at Hibi, H-I-B-I, thought of it. So I'll put a link on the blog, raise a wand to that. What are you raising a wand to, dear?
I am raising a wand to something that we learned about on the podcast, and then I actually fell in love with. Like, we took the sample home, the Tatcha Silk Canvas Face Primer.
I've been using that too.
It's awesome, right?
Yes.
All right, guys, it's a little pricey, okay? Well, I'm saying a little. It's a luxury item. It's $52. And when you open it, you'll feel like this is a luxury item. It comes in, like, nice packaging. It has this little, like, fancy disc that you use to, like, nudge out the product. You don't really need it after the first time. But it's this very silky, I want to say waxy, but that's not the right word.
It actually is, because it's based on Geisha Bensuke, which is that wax primer. I wrote about it for Marie Claire. That's the only reason I know.
Dr. Goldstein.
Dr. Goldstein.
It was based on a Japanese ritual. It was based
on the geisha. They used to put that wax primer down on their skin before their makeup to protect their face from the makeup.
I love that. I also, you know, we live in New York City. It's absolutely filthy. I just moved to very close to the West Side Highway. Wow, the fumes.
So you put on this solid primer, the silk canvas.
Yeah, I feel like I'm cocooned in a silken primer.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, when I'm out, like, you know, hitting the pavement, I'm running around a lot now, Jen.
I know.
I'm scooting around all day long. I have to tell you, I've tried a lot of primers. I usually use them for, like, you know, a little bit, and then I'm like, oh, God, this is freaking annoying, and I forget to use them. This is
raise a wand worthy.
Yeah, this is raw material. Thank you so much for listening. We're growing because of people like you telling your friends and fam and all that. But if you really want to help us out, which would be amazing, please go over to iTunes and write us a little review or just throw us some stars.
5, please.
That would be incredible.
And if you want to know where to find any of the people or places or things we talked about, go to fatmascara.com and check out our blog. You can follow us on all the social channels at fatmascara or email us at info@fatmascara.com.
We'll even read your letters on the air.
So profesh.
So profesh.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.